Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. This is Fred Schenkelberg. Yeah, I know that you were off traveling in some tropical paradise of some sort, so I'm glad you're back and into the snowy world of
and warm. Yeah, snowy one day and very warm the next. So yeah.
It must be Colorado with springtime.
Yeah.
But before we get into this, we were chatting briefly because we're zeroing in, I think later this year, in a few months, four months, I don't have it calendared out, but it won't be long. We're going to be at our 1,000th episode. Can you believe that?
Yeah, and I did number one.
That's so. Right. We did the first couple of them. And so I think you and I need to do a retrospective at parts, but I'd love to get one or two listeners online with us that, you know, could lay claim that they've listened to all of them or they, you know, listened to a good number of them. Or if it made a difference for you, you know, if it really changed the way you approach something and it made a big difference for you and your company and organization, customers, stuff like that. So if you're interested in joining us for the 1,000th episode, let us know and get in touch with us and we'll chat and we'll get on the horn and record and see what we can create a decent episode that respects the, you know, all the time that goes into making these things, but also all the fun that we've had, especially if you listen to any of Kirk's and I's episodes. But, so I wanted to do that plug real quick, but I had a topic for you, Kirk. I was looking through a bunch of different stuff and I'm trying to organize a bunch of information on the site. And one of them was, and I know you've seen this, is that people will try to do a phase gate review development process or concept and development prepare for manufacturing and all that kind of stages.
Right.
And then I've seen so many organizations try to organize all the testing that goes into that.
Right.
Let's do halt on the first prototype. Let's test like some of the subsystems or components. Let's do accelerated testing. Let's do this and that. Environmental testing, reliability growth testing. There's dozens of different tests.
There's compliance testing. There's all kinds of FCC. There's just a tremendous amount that, right.
I try to stay out of that stuff. It usually is not useful, except for being in business and being able to sell your product.
Exactly. You do have to do some,
you got to get your stickers on the back. Otherwise, Walmart won't carry you, kind of thing.
Right, you've got a lot of stickers. In fact, I know that Dell was running out of space on their labels for all the CE and different
CSA
compliance.
It's part of business, but sometimes they can be useful for reliability and quality and stuff. Sometimes, what are they thinking? So I don't get much into that. And then there's all the production stuff. We have, we're monitoring solder paste on electronics and we're doing this and doing that.
Right.
And then they have in-line testing, circuit testing and functional testing and burn-in the 8,000 variations of that. And then it doesn't stop there. Then we end up with ongoing reliability testing that we keep sampling and looking for stuff.
Right.
Why do we do so much testing?
Well, because things change in the manufacturing production and,
design a robust part component.
You get a robust part and component from certain manufacturer robust components and parts, and they discontinue that robust component or part.
It's too expensive.
And you have to go to another one. Right. And this is kind of like, their big customers might no longer use it, so it's just not profitable for them to make it. It may be a great part or whatever, or the biggest customer asks them to develop a certain variation of that or something like that. But we don't know at any time all the suppliers, unless you're a huge company like Dell or HP or whatever, and have some sway with them. That it's most of the time the all the component manufacturers are trying to improve and reduce the cost of their manufacturing of the components. And at the same time, your company, the OEM, the final producer of the system, is trying to do that and maybe lessen the cost of manufacturing. So it's always very dynamic in the production environment.
I disagree. It doesn't have to be. I mean, I'm looking at,
it doesn't have to be.
No, well, but, I mean, I'm looking at factory equipment and they're using, through-hole circuit boards for simple, operation of their equipment. Mm-hmm. And it just works for a long, long, long time. And it keeps working. Right. And they can get spares because they're simple to make. And right. It's the high zoot stuff and all the other. But I think I get your point that things change. And there's always dynamics on that. But I make the contention that testing is expensive. All of it is expensive
to
do.
Absolutely.
So the question is, just because things are changing, why do we keep doing it? Why do we keep running? And you've run into companies, Kirk, that have their suite of tests. They're going to run it no matter what, whether they learn anything or not.
But right, because they have all. Well, it's just like when I go over to China, I see all these huge nano chambers that are, testing some power supplies at just elevated temperature. Mm-hmm. That's all they do. And that was what they considered. That was the burn-in process.
Yeah, which had nothing to do with any failure mechanism.
Terrible return on investment.
Yeah.
Or as far as finding anything, but they always have this equipment, so they've got to use it. They feel like they have to do this, and that we've always done it this way. So, and we've had a few fallouts. We have a few things that fail. So, to them that may be success. Now, comparing that to their field failures, probably doesn't mean anything. I mean, the rate of failures in the field compared to what they find in just an elevated environment is very poor. They don't look at that.
It's one of my primary problems with way so many different organizations approach just reliability and quality in general. We'll test it in. Well, that's been debunked, 40 years ago? Can't test this stuff in. Now, we still do a lot of testing. And so my contention is, if you're going to spend all that time and energy doing it, make sure that you actually get some useful information out of it. And that means that your testing has to be as dynamic as your changing environment.
Right.
So you go back to your example, your first one you thought of is, we got a part got discontinued. We got to swap something else into it.
Right.
Now, I hope our listeners are paying close attention, because no matter what that sales guy says, that it's the same form, and fit and function, it's a drop-in replacement, you'll never notice it. That is almost always not true. Sorry to tell you this, but you need to hear it.
Right. And they somehow reduced the cost of probably producing it. They may have, reduced the anyway.
Yeah, there's something different about it. I've run into where the company, it's the same company making these components, and they moved to a new factory, and the amount of variability in that just went through the roof.
Yeah.
And we had all kinds of, so part of it, why something like that is like, let's make sure. So a whole bunch of this sets of testing and all these different things we do, and even failures that we see, is a way to get feedback to start bridging that gap of, well, now we know it's either good, it's got plenty of margin, it works as it's supposed to, or it doesn't.
Right. Well, that's, and we talk about, and this, the deal is, or the big first step is to make sure you have plenty of margin, or as much margin as the technology will allow.
Right.
And that's the first thing that allows for variation in a changing component, a changing vendor, a changing
use case,
parametrics,
all kinds of stuff.
But at the same time, you have to correlate also what you're finding in your testing to what you're seeing in the field. Is it catching the same things? If you're trying to do a screening, which is generally very costly and ineffective, even HAS is probably the most, but it's also one of the most expensive types of inspection processes on ongoing reliability. So, we all realize that at the first of manufacturing, there's going to be probably a learning curve. That's where the shakeout of the early production issues, manufacturing, assembly, all that. And so, after you you get something in place and it's hard to, you know, set up a screening program, there is a tendency to want to continue it. But at some point, you know, it really doesn't have a good return on investment you've got to a mature manufacturing level, you know.
You've heard my stories. This one place was testing for like 20 years and it was a test that had absolutely nothing to do with anything that that product could fail for. It was like, you know, I'm going to take this perfect ceramic block and I'm going to heat it to room temperature for 2 hours and see if it's still ceramic block. And it was equivalent to that. It was
brick. You know, is this brick going to stay together at, you know,
at room temperature?
Right.
In a controlled environment, they call it.
And some of that is just political, you know, we tested it, you know, and somebody up the chain in management says, well, we're testing it. You know, we did the testing.
Gives them plausible deniability kind of stuff.
Right, right.
But if you're not learning anything, I like the way you phrase it, Kirk, is, you know, if you're not getting an ROI on it, if it's not giving you any return and you're spending thousands and thousands of dollars and all this time and manpower to run this evaluation and you check the box going, we tested it. Okay, so that's why you never want me on the other side of the table when I'm somebody buying the component. Is like, well, we did this test, we did that test, and it's like, all right, so what does that mean? You did all this testing. What is that actually? How do I interpret that? You did all these standard tests, XYZ, blah, blah, 1, 2, 4, and whatever, blah, 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 a whole page full of tests.
Okay. Right, they all passed.
Yeah, they all passed. Okay, what does that mean? Well, we met the standard. Okay, so what does that mean? Will it work in my product? Well, there's no guarantee.
Right. And so, and you know, you got to consider other factors that somebody's comfortable with this. They know how to do it. They come in and do it, their job, and they're really not, you know, somebody challenging that maybe threatens their department, their job, whatever. And you know, they have a vested interest in
well, I'm sorry, if you're just wasting money, you know, and everybody's worried about cost reduction, well, get rid of that great big thermal chamber that's burning electricity all day and night and damaging products unsuccessfully.
Right.
Why are we bothering? What's the point?
Well, in certain industries, you get a lot of money, like military industrial complex, maybe.
Well, don't get me started. That medical.
I know. I saw the New York Times had an article, opinion piece. Are we paying too much for our military equipment? And I just started to laugh.
Yeah,
but, you know, like, I said, boy, don't even go there, buddy. You got a lot of people vested in keeping the way it is and the high profit margins and everything. But it's dangerous. I just wouldn't even approach it. But anyway, in the commercial competitive industry, I think that's more the case, that they won't do things and they'll minimize maybe the testing. And yet, if they do that, and that's fine if their field reliability is fine, but they at the same time don't have a good feedback from the field.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't have that and they don't have...
you just send it off to a black box and you don't know what happens. That's a different issue. It's getting the feedback and understanding it.
Right.
The
field is the best place. I mean, the field is perfect. And a lot of times they have beta, you know, companies
and you obligate your customers to give you feedback. That's great.
Yeah.
It's just that even when you get products back or you have a call center answering questions and stuff like that, all too often those systems are set up to turn around customers. I have to talk to 25 customers in the next 3 minutes, otherwise I don't meet my quota.
Right.
You know, and they're not judged on actually solving the problem. I think Dell had an amazing customer support. People had failures and they were more loyal to Dell at one point.
Right.
But the idea is that they're there for a different purpose than giving us good failure analysis.
Exactly.
You know,
and so that is right. And it's very difficult to get parts, especially small assemblies and other things, back from the field to investigate directly yourself, as opposed to sending them to the vendor who produced them, who will always plead that it was customer induced damage.
Well, it was, yeah, the standard, you know, it was ESD. It was ESD. Yeah, it's not our fault, man. You abused it. You dropped it. You did this. You did that. We've never seen that before. How could that happen?
Exactly.
We saw that last week. We solved it already. Don't worry about it.
Right. They'll always have an excuse. It's your fault or somebody, the customer abused it or something to that effect. So, but, you know, it's understandable that being a former field service engineer, that the best thing I could do about fixing an ion implanter or a photoresist equipment was to get it up and running. If I had to replace five parts, that's fine, because the speed and the cost of production being down for a piece of capital equipment, especially, was quite high. And then after I did it, you're kind of the fireman that put out the fire, and
I got a big arrow. Yeah.
And your company's too small to have a real good failure analysis department. So you really don't go back and look at the boards, you know.
Yeah. I've seen companies that do have the resources and just ignore it. Their focus is on get it back up and running and move on. And
well, that's critical.
So how many times have you seen the similar complaint? Oh, every day, right. All the time.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you actually fix it? You're getting all this great feedback. Use it. The other one that bothers me is that somebody does, like, they're doing ongoing reliability testing, but the development team has moved on. They said, well, that's our last product. We don't deal with that one anymore unless it's a big issue. And so how do you know if it's a big issue? Well, we've never had one. And to make a long story short is they never looked. They didn't care about warranty. They didn't get feedback from the field. The failure rates were actually pretty low in general.
Yeah,
and their products were pretty darn robust. Yet every now and then they would have, when I finally found the data from those years of testing they did every month, they would do like a whole qualification suite of tests on their production equipment, mm-hmm. which was an amazing expense. And
right.
And it predicted every single time that they had a spike in field failures, every one of them. And it was one test that did it. And they had like 30 different tests running and hundreds and hundreds of samples being used, just burned, you know, destroyed. I said, get rid of 29 of these, do this one test, but only if you're going to pay attention to it. If you're not going to ever look at the results, and you're not going to improve your product for this recurring problem. When this process gets a little out of control, you have this problem. Fix the process, fix the design. But if you continue to ignore it, cancel all those tests and pocket the money. And they were like, and they said, well, geez, that'll save us, you know, blah, 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 all this money. I says, can I have 10%? No.
Yeah.
They didn't even think about it. No.
No. And, you know, it's funny how also companies that have a major problem with one component, then all the manufacturers of that type of component, say capacitors, aluminum electrolytics, then the company will just be focused. I mean, just hyper focused on capacitors.
Yep.
And ignoring the rest of the components, because in the past they had a very expensive problem with capacitors being mismanufactured. So then they get all the manufacturers of capacitors to do all these long tests that don't show anything through thousands and thousands of capacitors burned up, you know, or, you know, wasted in doing that. And at the same time, there's something on in another room in that, you know, it's sort of assembly in another a section of that subsystem or whatever that might go haywire, you know, but they're not looking there. They just looked at the last place that failed.
I ran into that with, there was an issue with ceramic capacitors cracking. The multi-layer ceramic.
MLCCs are notorious for that.
Yeah. And so I had done a bunch of work with the multi-layer ceramics and how they crack and all this stuff. And so I kind of knew what I was looking for. And I went to the factory and not the ceramic manufacturer, because of course, by the time I got involved, they'd already tested on and off bazillions of these and 3-point bend tests and how robust they are and all this other stuff. And yeah, they do crack when you bend them enough, but they weren't cracked to start with.
They're ceramic.
They're a piece of glass. Come on. And so I get to this factory and I'm walking down the aisle, and this kid is his very first hour of employment, he's depaneling circuit boards and he's bending them. There's a little break off tabs and he's just open air, just flexing the whole circuit board. So it just makes this big arc and you can hear stuff cracking and parts falling off and everything else. And he goes, well, they told me to take these apart, break these tabs. Like crack, 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 crack.
Right. Right.
I'm like, okay. He was happy because he was going through it real quick. And oh my God. And that was after the quality guys tried to give us donuts and tell us how great their onboarding and training system was. But the idea is we get feedback, usually through testing, not always. We get feedback lots of other ways. We have all these different things we can do. It's a matter of that we should do it when we use the information. Two is we need the information. If you're going to do a bunch of stuff just because you have the chamber and you rarely get any information out of it, quoting you again, Kirk, is, well, that's not a good ROI. Spend your focus somewhere else.
Right.
But use the feedback we get, whether it's from a halt, and we were chatting offline before we got started, is that just often the common resistance of, well, of course it broke. You overstressed it. Or we can't go that high because it'll fail. And it's like, well, that's the idea. We want to see if you're right or not.
Right. Exactly. Let's see. Empirical. I mean, what do you got to lose? You know, it's, again, we're not just, you know, dragging this behind a truck and on the street bouncing around. Yeah. That's not the idea, that we see how we can destroy it. It's to see real limits and compare those limits. I call it comparative limit analysis. Look and compare limits and look at what you, if you don't, I mean, everybody says, well, it didn't break. We took it up to this temperature. It didn't break. But it stopped at this temperature. And the last one, the other samples stopped at 20 degrees below or, 20 degrees or above.
Yeah.
Right.
And then there's let's investigate this,
you know, let's get another couple samples and see if that's a wide distribution of that particular limiting factor, that limiting component, whatever. There. And that's going to say those tails are going to reach into, over time, especially as it ages and fatigue damage, that the tail of the weakest units are going to reach into the worst case stress environment, or the worst case least strong assembly. You know, they're going to overlap the strength. Yep.
The idea is that we got to learn from what we do. If we're not, then why are we doing it? It's, you know, the basic idea.
Right.
But if you're running a bunch of tests and if you just ask the question, what are we getting for this investment? What are we learning?
And
And if you're running a whole bunch of stuff and everything passes, the second question is the test actually doing anything? You know, is it actually pursuing what you think it's pursuing? Is it actually working?
Right.
But there's all kinds of stuff we could talk about. Product testing for on and on and on, I'm pretty sure. But the idea is, you know, if you're listening to this and there's all this stuff going on, and if you got some questions or some ideas, or you'd like, you know, what's worked for you to actually get the most out of, environmental testing, for example, that it made a big difference because you did it well. Love to hear the success stories. Or if you're doing a bunch of testing and it's costing you a bunch of time and sucking up a bunch of manpower, ask why. And then let us know what the results are of that. If just pursuing, let's do something useful here. Let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And Kirk and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So plenty of ways for you to get in touch with us. And once again, if we're getting closer to our 1,000th episode, if you've got a favorite episode, or if you've listened to a bunch of episodes and would like to get on the air with us, with Kirk and I, we'd love to chat with you about how the show has worked for you and what's working or not working and all that good stuff. So let us know.
Yeah, that'd be great. I don't think we've ever had a listener call involved in our discussions.
We got the technology. We've screwed it up so many different ways. We can figure it out.
Yeah. So we'll try that hopefully in the future.
Yeah. But we need somebody to raise their hand first. So that,
That's right. And we know you're out there. So,
well, we hope you're out there.
We hope you're out there. So don't be afraid. And in fact, we'd love to hear your feedback directly on live.
Well, I'm going to reserve editing rights into this. Okay. But anyway, yeah, we'll see what we get.
All right.
Thanks, Kirk.
Okay, Fred. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.